I first should introduce myself. My name is Mark Bjerke. I'm a tourist here this week, as many of you are. I'm one of the guests. A little bit of how this came to be, and it's amazing to me the number of people that showed up. I was a staff member here at Holden Village for most of the summer of 1966, and most of the summer of 1969, and most of the summer of 1971. My wife was a guest at the village in 1968. I was here a little bit of the winter of 68, and she, as my wife, was here in 71. A couple months ago, when we knew we were coming as a family to visit the village for a week, we were kind of looking at some slides and so on. The thought crossed my mind that, you know, many of the things have changed in the village in physical appearance, and yet many of the things have remained very much the same. And I thought, well, maybe some other people would like to see some of the old pictures. And so I sent a letter up and said, you know, maybe some afternoon I could show a few slides in one of the chalet living rooms or something. Maybe a handful of people would like to watch. So in the typical Holden spirit, this is what evolved and happened. The title, and I won't admit to having invented that title, I think I have to blame somebody else, but it said something about slides, memories, and tall tales. Well, I brought the slides, I have a few memories, and for the tall tales, I have the ladder, so I can get up on that. It's the closest I could understand to what they're talking about, tall tales. I'm neither a professional photographer nor a professional speaker, so you'll have to bear with me. I hope you folks enjoy some of it, maybe learn something about the history of the village, not the mining company now, but the village operation. And when you've had enough, I won't be at all embarrassed if you feel like you want to leave. And if we want to stand over here and visit in the corner afterwards, that's fine too. Remember that the gift from Howe Sound was in about 1960. The first two or three years that the village operated, it was based entirely a summer program and very little program per se. It was mostly work camp groups. A lot of them were college students from the various church schools who came up here during the summer to, you know, fix broken windows and wash dirty windows and clean up the mess and so on that had occurred over 5 years of being a ghost town and hikers hiking through and people plundering and vandalizing and so on. The winter before I first came, the winter of 65-66, there had been a handful of men who had planned to live in Chalet 1 through the winter. And by early spring, it was down to one. And Terry Saturn, who just left today, was alone at the village, and he'd been here through that spring when I first came up. Terry, for those of you who don't know, is the creator of the statue of the dancing servant that I hid behind the wall so you could see the slides, and also the builder of the harpsichord over here, as well as many other things. So Terry's truly a gifted individual. Terry spent at least 4 winters here and at least 7 or 8 or 9 summers, so he was here a long time. If you folks are ready and the projectionist is ready, why don't we start? Holler out a question if you think of one. I'll try to tell you the years as we go. I will tell you only that that two things. One, the slides are in chronological order by year. And secondly, that each of us takes something different from the village in our memories and in what we do. Some people saw the craft, some saw the program, some the kitchen. I'm a builder and fixer of things in my avocation. So the kinds of pictures I took were the kinds of things that were important to me, and a lot of that happens to be the physical facilities. So if you kill the lights. Remember, I'm starting now in 1966. Is that in focus, those of you who are, is it good? Good as we're going to get? The schoolhouse at that time, before Narnia had been labeled on there, the only reason the slide's important is to somehow get it focused here. And maybe an object lesson, the yellow monster in the front is still here. It's a chameleon, it's now green. 1943 Ford Navy bomb service truck. And what is a bomb service truck doing in a retreat center? That vehicle came in that year, 1966, as a piece of equipment to help us lay the pipeline on the second portion of the hydroelectric project. Lodge 1, remembering that these were built as dormitories for miners, single miners. The year I came in was the first year that that had been used for staff housing, the first year it had been used since the mining company had abandoned it. If you remember that each of these dormitories, when it was built, had 14 rooms on each floor, 28 rooms, plus at the end, one end was showers and one end was restrooms and lavatories, realizing that it was all men. And every room had a radiator, steam radiator in it, or hot water radiator for heat under the window, and there was a built-in table over every one of those radiators right under the window. And the heat system was a General Electric oil-fired boiler in the basement underneath there, or in the crawl space. And we didn't have any hot water for showers, and we decided we were going to fix that. So we crawled around underneath there for several days, reconnecting and swiping pipe and fittings and putting things together and everything else, so that we could have hot water for showers. And we put a timer, electric timer, on the boiler so that it wouldn't take, you know, diesel oil all day long when we only need showers morning and evening. We were pretty proud of ourselves one evening. We had it all put together. Came down, had supper, went to Vespers. I was out several hours, somewhat past midnight as I remember. Went back in the back door, went into the restroom and used the urinal, kind of about half asleep, and I flushed it. And it steamed. It took me a moment or two to realize what was wrong, and a new definition of hot flushes. We'd hooked the hot and cold water up backwards, so the next day we went back underneath the building and rearranged things. That was Koinonia, the first time I saw it. The fireplace that was, or is now in the center of it, was just under construction. There was a great big black iron hood over it. I have a picture of that, but it's too dim to see. You can also see how tall the tailings pile was until fairly recently. At that time, we called it the hospital rather than Agape, and you'll notice on the right-hand side that the laundry isn't there. That was an excavation job that happened later to excavate underneath the crawl space where that big cloth hanging is, or painting is now hanging. The village center doesn't look far different, except that the street out in front, the main street out in front at that time, still had a certain amount of asphalt pavement on it. It took the installation of a new sewage system to totally demolish the pavement. Chalet 1, where the gentleman who had spent the winter had lived, looks very much the same.
Mark?
Yes?
Before Terry left, he told me at breakfast one morning that that winter that he ended up being the only person here, he would snowshoe down to the boat.
Mm-hmm. On Fridays.
Yeah, he started out at 3 o'clock in the morning and would snowshoe down the trail, the road, and come back by 8 o'clock in the evening.
Realizing, people, that during the winter, dead of winter, the mountains behind us here are high enough that the village is in the shadow all day. The sun never actually shines down in here. So realize how short the days were when he hiked down there on snowshoes. He did that because the only snowmobile they had died early in the fall.
I asked him what he ate, and he said, oh, there was food left over from the summer program. Took great big beef roasts and pork roasts. He took them down to the shop and sawed them apart with the bandsaw.
Mm-hmm.
The freezer burn was so bad that, and he didn't realize it because it was taking place slowly.
Mm-hmm.
But in the spring, when somebody else came in, and then when he got a taste of fresh meat, he realized
what he'd been eating. It's one of those problems, you know, it's like a little logging camp. You know, somebody's the cook, and whoever complains first about the food has to become the cook. Well, he had no choice. I mean, he was cook and bottle washer and everything else. Knows how small the trees are. And how young Wes Priebe is. Chalet 2 is just off his shoulder. Unfortunately, I don't have a picture of it before the great fire. But look, you can see the trees, which now... Well, I'll show you in a little bit.
What
yes? These are still 1966, summer. That's the same view from the other end, and you can see a little bit of the roof of Chalet 2, but that's all. Is that still in focus?
No.
No. Can I make it better? That got worse. That about it? Too much? There. No. We'll get there. From that same Chalet 10 porch, looking over at the mine and the mill building, you can see that the big warehouse building up on the third level right there was still in existence. Just came down recently. Part of the reason that at least some of those people left that winter when Terry ended up alone has to do with a little snow. The mining company intentionally located this town site and Winston Camp, the town site that had approximately 100 family homes, located them around avalanche chutes to miss the avalanches. And if you sit on the other side of the hill and look back across, you can see that the mountain behind us bulges here and the chutes are on both sides, much like the valleys of a roof. Unfortunately, during that winter, a chunk of rock, which you used to be able to see up here on the hill above the village, and about the size and shape of a Volkswagen microbus, broke off the hill and came tumbling down. Well, it started a big avalanche. It came down right behind the hospital, and there was a garage back there. And by that spring, the station wagon that had been in the garage was a fastback, and the garage was gone. And there was another garage just past the hike house. And the snow slide came down and took out that pole. You see the brand new pole there they just put in. Took out that pole and went up by the hospital. And in the garage were these two vehicles, the garage down by the hike house, were those two vehicles. When I first saw them, the snowslide had come down through, gone in the front door of the garage, and out the back door, and had taken all the walls with it and left the roof. The Jeep was upside down out behind in the snow with its wheel straight up, and the pickup was still in the garage with the roof on it. The right rear tire was completely down, as though it were flat, I mean, clear down to the rim. When we jacked the roof off the pickup, the rear tire still had 45 pounds of air in it, so you can tell, huh? But the pickup was never the same again. It was became the garbage wagon later. That was taken from the footbridge when the cribbing, the log cribbing that the mining company had put in was still there. And you go up and look now and there's almost none of that cribbing left. They'd put in a double layer of logs, you know, next to the bank and then back in farther away from the river on each side with cross ties to keep the river from washing away the abutments of the bridge or washing away the tailings. Unfortunately, logs don't last forever, and there have been enough high water in the spring to wash most of it out. But I don't think you'll find any of those logs there today. That was the original truck bridge that the mining company had built, and it's just upstream, or downstream, just this side of the current truck bridge. It had a little sag to it, and it had a lot of sway to it when you walked across there with a crawler tractor. I used to walk pretty slow when I went across. The first people who came up as part of the village gift recipients were here when the salvage company was still removing equipment and taking apart major structures and so on. All the switch gear from the electrical substation and the crushers and ball mills and so on in the mill all went out. Fortunately, they bought from that salvage company two great big I-beams, which laid along the road about by the diesel plant and the footbridge for a number of years and are now the two main beams of the replacement truck bridge. They spotted those beams, and I guess, you know, recycling may be great, but reusing is even better, so they reused the beams. And this bridge has now been disassembled. I was always afraid it was going to come apart when I was going across it. This is taken from the gravel pile that you can see, what we now call the third level. The mining company and early folks, we used to call it 1,500 foot level. That's Winston Camp, where the private homes were. Because they had been abandoned by their owners and left to the elements and so on for 5 years, and then when the village took over the gift, it was basically this town was all they could get their arms around and swallow. The Forest Service, realizing that those homes with no heat in the winter and porches falling down and so on, said that was just too great a fire risk to leave this far away, that if that thing ever caught on fire, there was enough flammable material there to have a roaring blaze before they could ever get a crew in to put the forest fire out. So they pushed them all in with cat and burned it one fall. I have seen pictures of it, and Rudy has a number of them up in the Portal Museum of some of those houses. You can see, though, that the foundations and footings were all still there. We could see lots of places where swing sets and clotheslines and so on had been. And it's currently the sewage effluent basin. I tell people it's the only place I've ever been where you put your sewer both upwind and uphill from where you live. But it was, you know, if you look at it now, the jungle has certainly reclaimed much of the area. The same, let me see if I can focus that just a hair. There. You can see down the lower right-hand corner the footbridge, way over in the corner there, and the diesel power plant. And then, again, the miners' village. You can see it was a pretty sizable area, you know, somewhat larger than the sewage ponds now are. And then Holden Lake, way up in the upper left corner there at the base of that glacier. Looking down lake from up there, again, when the tailings still had their parapet walls on them and no gravel on top of them. One of the projects I got involved with that first summer I was here, I started out as supposed to be the mechanics helper, and that lasted about 2 days, and then I got into some other things. The mining company had built a dam up on Railroad Creek, or excuse me, up on Copper Creek, to divert water for the domestic water in town and also the industrial water in the mill. You know, they obviously used a lot of water in their separation process. And that had been used by the village after the gift, continued to be used for water here in town. And when they first put the hydro plant in, they used it as a temporary measure, knowing that it didn't have enough elevation to run the hydro plant at its design efficiency. So the dam was built farther up the hill from the mining company's dam, and it's the one that's now in use both for the hydropower as well as domestic water, I understand. Well, at that time, every morning after first breakfast, the crew boss or staff coordinator or whoever would read the assignments of who was supposed to do what every day. Well, day after day after day, they'd list three or four of us to go work on the dam. And one day we were up there taking a break, and some people came huffing and puffing up there, because it's a pretty good hill, and they wanted to see the dam. Well, we pointed it to them. You know, it's just above that man's head back there, and it's about 2.5 feet tall. Well, they were from Iowa, and they'd come out, and on the way they'd seen Grand Coulee Dam, and they'd been hearing for a week about our dam and wanted to come see it. The dam is really literally only about 2 feet tall. And then we built this wooden box for settling out the sediment and then channeling the water into a 14-inch pipe that comes all the way down the hill, down by the water tank, and on down to the hydro. There's the dam, that thing right there. And this space in between is the flume. There's from the opposite end. The gentleman there is Dave Struffert, at least semi-professional photographer that was assigned to take some pictures for the village. And so I took him up there, and he was taking pictures, so I took a picture of him at the same time. The reverse, the picture he took at the time, ended up on a Holden Village calendar that was published. This picture was taken right above that, and people say, well, how in the world did you ever get concrete up there? Well, it was a little tough. The village didn't own any crawler tractors. We only had one backhoe and that little bomb truck and one flatbed truck and the pickup and the Jeep. Some school buses. We rented a crawler tractor from a logging outfit that was working down the hill here, built a little two-wheel trailer out of a rear end of an old truck, and hauled all the gravel and sand up to the hill up here and set up the village cement mixer, which is still up by the garage, and set it up right here on top of this hill overlooking the space, and it's a pretty steep grade there. And we built the wooden flume that you see from the left to right, and down over the edge we had a doorbell with a battery, 6-volt battery. And so when we were ready for concrete down at the bottom, we pushed the buzzer, and the guys up on top, if they were ready, would dump us, you know, some concrete down that chute. And when we got ready to quit, we'd push the buzzer, and it would keep coming because it was already in the chute. So we spilled a little concrete, but eventually the thing got built. Then we had the pipe. The pipe came up here on the barge, and then it came up on a logging truck, and it's 40-foot long pieces, and it's 14-inch diameter, and it's dipped and wrapped. They'd already laid the pipe from the hydro plant up to the level of what's now the third level by the water tank, and had tapped into the old mining company's line there. And I made the mistake of admitting that I'd grown up here in the Northwest and had been on a few side hills that leaned mostly up and down and been around some heavy equipment, and didn't bother. The guy didn't figure out I was 19 years old. But he put me in charge of running this thing, and we hauled those pieces of pipe. We'd pick them up with that tractor right in the middle. That piece of fire hose with a chain through it's right in the middle of the pipe to balance. We'd lift it up and drive the truck forward till the middle of that pipe was right even with the driver's shoulder. And then we'd back up and start up that hill. We'd chain it down and start up that hill with one piece of pipe. When we got to part way up, it got too steep. We couldn't drive anymore with a four-wheel drive rig. We'd unhook that cable off the front, and three guys, one would stand on the foot on the brake, and the other three would climb up the hill, tie the cable around a stump, and we'd winch ourselves up. When we got to the top, on the back, right above the fellow to the right's head, there's a traveling chain hoist. We would push it uphill, because we were always parked on a hill, hook onto the pipe, pick it up, and roll it back the length of that trolley back there, unhook, crawl back up, push it back up, hook it up, and do that until we'd unload the pipe off the back, roll it over against the side of the bank, and then back down, because you couldn't turn around. It wasn't too bad until they found out that there were some places that only three of the rear tires were showing, leaving tracks on the ground, because there wasn't room for the fourth tire on the road. I show you that only to show that was the only backhoe we had, and we were cultivating out in front of the Narnia. That's right across from the snack bar now. 4th of July celebration, July 3rd, 1966. That's taking Holden liberties. The 4th was a weekday, and the 3rd was a weekend, so they decided, well, we'd move the parade to the weekend. Turned out it poured rain on the 3rd during the parade, and it was nice and sunny on the 4th, and there were also more people here on the 4th, so we missed. The first gentleman back with the brown sweater on there and waving his... I'll have to tell you what that is. The person that gave it to him called it a wife beater because he was engaged at the time, was Werner Jansen, who for a number of years was, a great number of years, was the business manager for Holden Village. Terry Saturn is the one in the back there wearing the white hospital coat. Doesn't look much different than he did last night, did he? The sign on the last gentleman's backside says, "I'm the barber too." In fact, it was true. It's Horty Chrisman. Horty spent a number of years here after his retirement as a volunteer. At one time, he was named the patron saint of Holden volunteer staff. He has since passed away. He was one of the people who was living in Chalet too when it burned. Plumber, logger, bus driver, mechanic, and in fact gave haircuts over here. One fall when I was ready to leave the village, I'd had a beard all summer and knew I was going out and going to be interviewing for jobs and so on. And Horty gave me a beard trim with his electric clipper so he'd leave about a week's shadow so I wouldn't get sunburned, because the rest of my face was tan. And the next spring I gave it to my mother for Mother's Day, and she was thrilled to get it, but about 6 months later when I saw her, she gave it back to me. Would you believe the housekeeping crew? Two things here. One is those were some of the uniforms that the kitchen staff, the waitresses and so on during the mining days had abandoned when they left. And some of that stuff was still around. And secondly, you know, for me to come up here and work for the summer, I got to do the kind of things I would have done at home anyway, or things that I enjoyed anyway. I always had a great deal of respect for those people who came here and, you know, washed toilets and mopped floors and washed clothes and those kinds of things. I always felt they, you know, had a greater sacrifice certainly than I, and I still believe that. Maximus, the snow tractor, the first snow tractor, it's still here. Some of you may have seen it in the 4th of July parade. The story behind the title or the name Maximus is a man by the name of Max Orlo, living in the Seattle area. His wife and two young daughters were up here on staff. Max was employed in an aerospace firm in the Seattle area, but had given notice he was leaving. He was going to change careers and become a math teacher at one of the church colleges. We got word one morning that Friday night he had been out on an errand on his motorcycle and apparently missed a corner on his, you know, residential neighborhood he lived in, and spun out on a corner and slid up into one of his neighbor's garage door and was killed. A very trying time, but in memory of Max and purchased with the contributions as a memorial to Max was the first snow tractor. And so that's why it still has Maximus on it. When the second one was purchased later, obviously if one's Maximus, the other has to be Minimus. And that was the transportation for the next several years with a Volkswagen microbus engine. And that's our tax dollars at work. The U.S. Forest Service used to keep some donkeys up here at the cabin at the end of the road here. And they liked the grass down at Lucerne a whole lot better than they liked the pasture grass up here. So the Forest Service men would spend all day leading them up here with halters, and within 3 days they're always back at Lucerne. They never stayed long. A picture of the lift that was actually remodeled and built that year, 1966. I had a little bit of a tough time, though. That was one of the buildings, you notice way up in the top of the picture is the fire sprinkler. Well, fire sprinklers aren't a new addition in Holden. They are in most of the buildings, certainly, but there were already fire sprinklers down in what's now the lift, because it was underneath a stairway, underneath the snack bar area. And we had lumber and boxes of nails and stuff all over the floor when a guy swung a 2x4 around and clobbered that sprinkler head. Well, you know, it's supposed to sprinkle when you hit it, and it did. And it took us about 45 minutes to find the valve to shut it off. So we had a puddle on the floor. But that's the lift in its inaugural week. A favorite of mine, one of the things that has changed over the years at Holden Village is every single night we had a Beanie sing. Beanie because the man at the piano is Beanie Lundholm. The piano was right next to where the buffet now is. The buffet used to be the base for those great big coffee urns that are now up on the wall at the far west end of the dining hall. Those big urns and pots were there from the mining days, and they were out on that table. And finally, somebody had a bright idea of why don't we put those up on a shelf and be able to use the table as a buffet. Rousing songs every single night. And then the last song was always Let's Go Play Volleyball, and everybody that wasn't on dish team headed for the schoolhouse to play volleyball. Holden Village rules. I believe that's probably Gertrude right behind him, isn't it? Is she back there? You're here, isn't that you?
I'm not sure.
Right there?
Well, I didn't have to color hair.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say that. Notice the style of pack frames, you know, something has changed. The wooden pack with the canvas bag I'm wearing over here on this side, compared to today's internal frames and Heliarc welded magnesium aluminum alloys. Walked up to Honeymoon Heights, and you can still see Chalet too at that time. Not very close view. Not sure I could get there again today. Think that might want to have one of Gertrude's. Isn't your son the second one from the left in the green sweater? Green sweatshirt? Phyllis Anderson, the dark blue carrying the red purse, was the village secretary for some while and lived in Chelan. The picture was taken over by about where they're building the new kiosk for the information. You may have noticed on the back side of the hotel, facing toward where we put the dirty dishes tonight, there's the sign that says the bus stop. And that's because that's where the bus did stop. Bus used to come in the village and go up between Lodge 4 and the jacuzzi pool, up what was a road at that time, and pulled up and stopped right by the business office corner of the village. I wasn't here when that changed, but I think it had something to do with an irate cook who had enough dust cloud blown in the back door of her kitchen for about a week in a row to say, this has got to stop. But we used to go right on by the back door of the kitchen, unload the luggage and people right there, and also reload the buses. Judy Jansen with the dark glasses on out in the middle. Werner right in the front. This was taken down on the dock that used to be down at Lucerne, the one the mining company built. Terry Saturn right here in the foreground, on just to the right of the pilings, and Joe Walmer on the left. You notice the village buses at that time. We had two white buses and a Ford. And you also notice the big hook on the right-hand side to the behind the bus. There was an actual railroad track-mounted crane on the dock that the mining company had left that was what they had used to load and unload freight in their all their freight and as well as all the ore. And was still in use. In fact, when I was first up here, there was a logging operation going on down the valley here, and that's what they used to unload the logs off a log truck into the lake and then floated them down lake behind a tugboat. We had a gal here on staff all summer who, as she was leaving the last day she was here, finally came over just in, you know, fit of anger. She says, "I've been hearing you guys talk all summer about the big white and the little white bus." And I says, "I've been here all summer and I haven't seen them yet. Where are these white buses?" We had to go out and explain to her that white was the manufacturer, you know, like Ford, Chevrolet, GMC, white, not the color. And we used to run those two whites up and down the hill. There's a blank in here because I'm changing years to 1968, and I was up in the very early spring. There was a flood in the attic of the hotel with a pipe that didn't get shut off, and the whole dining room ceiling fell in. And they'd hauled enough stuff back in here, and I came up during my spring vacation from college to help put it in. The dog was Lucrece, that was Terry's dog, and that's Koinonia. At that time, the winter complement of people was probably 15 or 20 for much of the winter, and they ate and lived primarily in Koinonia, and they had a little kitchen where the reading room now is. One night when we finished working on that ceiling, we had decided we were going to have dinner in the hotel, because just to celebrate the fact that we'd finally put the whole ceiling together. We set a table for 12, and one plate went unused, so there were only 11 of us in town that night. There you can see the side of this building right outside the door here. In March, it kind of buries what's now the railing or the ramp out here. The hotel building, things were already starting to melt, see? That's looking up Main Street, headed right on up the road here in a blinding snowstorm. Then my wife was a guest for a week or so in the summer of 1968. So that's what these are. That's what the mining company had built as a warehouse, and upstairs were offices. Substantial building with steel frame. The second floor up there was a reinforced concrete slab, and it's about to become a basketball court. The entire building is down. But that's what it did look like. Just beyond that building then would be the main entrance to the main mine portal. Main Street down by Chalet 1, you notice the fire hoses across the street. Well, that was one of the occasions that the district or the village had a fire in town. The exhaust fan on a snack bar burned out. It caused a great deal of excitement. Fortunately, not very much damage. But when the fire alarm went off, it in fact was for real, not just an accidental false alarm. Flag raising on the 4th of July. The flag is down by the front of Narnia and now has trees grown up so big around it that you couldn't get a flag up there without getting tangled in the tree. Something about our food is holden untouched by human hands. The kitchen staff in the 4th of July parade. I think this might be Rudy right here in this lower left corner. Doesn't that look like his hat? Same hat, I think. The snow tractor was, you know, is towing the ingenious little buggy behind it that was actually used up and down the road. During that era, they ran the buses as far up from the lake as they could, you know, depending on the depth of the snow, and then used the snow tractor. The snow tractor was pulling a little cart behind it that had both runners and wheels. So you know, as you went through snow drifts and so on, it kind of ran on the runners, and if you hit some bare pavement, it rolled on the wheels. And that was the way all the people, luggage, supplies, and everything had to come in. The village didn't have any equipment to keep the road open at that time. Yeah, a minor business turned into a major industry. That's the same pickup that the garage roof landed on. It never did have a windshield after that. Okay, this. That's a jacuzzi under construction in 1968, summer. You can see that they'd done the excavation, and that's about as far as they had gotten. My wife happened to be here at the time that you could see it being built. There again, the number of the staff and so on sitting out on the lawn by the bus stop waiting for the bus to come. The next ones then were when I came up in the summer of 1969. And if there's ever an object lesson of the danger of fire in Holden Village, that was Chalet 2. A number of people were living in it during the winter, and some others were living down in Koinonia. Chalet 2 was somewhat unique, and it had been built as sort of a guest house, so it was more apartment type like, or individual room type, rather than just a private home, you know, with one living room, one bathroom, and three bedrooms. So it was very amenable to the needs of the staff. Unfortunately, one afternoon when they were, most of the guys were up in the garage working, and some of the other people were down in Koinonia, one of the ladies in Koinonia realized that the thing was on fire. She ran all the way up to the garage because there was no communication at that time. Told the guys up there that it was on fire. They jumped in the snow machine, came roaring down here, dug down into the fire hydrant house, hooked up the hose and no water. Ran over to the next hydrant house, dug down to it and no water. Decided that they had to go back up to the third level by the water tank to turn on the bypass line that would put the hydro dam water pipe into the city water down here. Roared up there, and you know, many feet of snow, not exactly sure where the valve is, know where it is in the summer, but it all looks a little different in the winter, and started digging furiously, got down to the ground and didn't hit the valve. So started digging around, and Terry said within about 3 feet he found the valve, opened it up, came back down here. Then they had water to try to keep the rest of the town from burning down. By that time, Chalet 2 was just totally engulfed in flames, and all the snow was melting and running off Chalet 1. That's what he says, actually what kept Chalet 1 from burning was all the snow running off and keeping the roof wet. I had the task of hauling Chalet 2 away. The only thing I had to haul it on was the 61 International truck that's around here, the one that still says number 1 because it was the first vehicle the village ever had. Originally, when you came up here, you got off the dock down there and you got in the back of a truck with, you know, racks on the side and rode up in the truck with the back of the truck with the luggage and all before they had any buses. We loaded this thing up, you know, scooped it up with the front end loader and loaded it in the truck and hauled it up to the burn pile and so on. And it worked pretty well. Didn't take us too awful long to get rid of it. Unfortunately, I was the only one in the garage that period of time, and didn't realize till afterwards that there was about a half inch wide crack right down the middle of the bed of that truck. And I had planted a few million nails in the streets and the roads. Well, I lived in the hotel at that time, and every morning I would walk out the west end of the hotel, and we didn't have a lot of room up at the garage level because there was some other stuff in the way there. And I'd look up and down the street where we parked most of the buses and so on down here. And the worst morning I ever had, there were 12 flat tires on the street out here in front. And there's no tire machine for changing them, you know. Yeah. So I didn't even get them all done that day. So I had 12 flats one morning. I guess you call that poetic justice, since I was the one that laid the nails in the road. There's some more Chalet 2. You see, it basically burned down to the snow line. Snack bar doesn't look a whole lot different. Caught them on a day that they weren't swamped with people. That's the river sauna. The inner city sauna was built as the garbage dock by the mining company to keep the bears and other critters out of the garbage. It ended up being a sauna early on. It already was that when I came in 66. This was in 69, and by then we were building the second river sauna. The first river sauna had been a wood frame building, small, less than a garage in size, single car garage in size. And one day it got a little too hot, went up in a cloud of smoke. So we built, this is the sauna building itself being built here, and then later that same summer they built the changing room and so on. So the logs were all cut here on the property and peeled and skidded out with slave labor. At this point we were moving rocks to line the canal that came down to it, and then later I dug the pond that's now concrete lined. You notice there's no pond there at this time. And also no changing room. All the way back to the village, towed it up to the garage. The original garage, the one that's there now, is the one that replaced the one that burned. Took it up to the garage and we opened up, took the hood off. You know, this is a semi-cab over engine, you know, like many vans today. I drained the radiator and the coolant, and we started taking the head off, had all the head bolts loose on the front end and everything else. I got inside and took the doghouse off on the inside. You know, it's below the dash that covers the back part of the engine that's in the cab with you. And I discovered what was wrong. I said, "Horty, I think we blew it by pulling the head on this thing." Reached in and showed him the rear spark plug that had blown out of the rear hole and smacked that doghouse so hard, and that's why he heard the bang and the whoosh, whoosh, whoosh from the engine. By then, we'd already loosened the head bolts and had to wait 2 weeks to get a new head gasket to put it back together again. So, jumping to confusions, you call that. Some more of the parade. You can see one of the sculptures in the background there. That was soon after that area had been landscaped, and to the far right you see the log that Horty cut with a chainsaw and hollowed out like a horse trough. And we used to just leave that water running all the time in that log, so that log's been there since then. It's about worn out today. Snoopy's doghouse here says happiness is a tummy full, obviously from the kitchen crew. Miracles on Tap, Super Mavericks. That's about the time the term Maverick came into use here as the kind of general maintenance type people. Carol Hinderly riding behind it in the electric golf cart. You see Carol way to the far right-hand side of the picture. We had a whole bunch of wood stave pipe that we were hauling one time with this little Volkswagen pickup. And those of you who are familiar with the old style Volkswagen, the sides, hinged at the bottom and folded down. Guy went around a corner down here and one of the sides unhitched and he unloaded his whole load over the side. The little red house in the background is still there. It's a hose house and the buses are in the background. This is up on the side of the hill about halfway between the incinerator, which would now be right in the middle of the picture, and the compost heaps would be kind of to the left out of the range of the picture. At that time we had a huge incinerator that the mining company had left. It looked like a great big teepee burner we used to see here in the Northwest at sawmills and so on. And all the garbage went in there, in that incinerator. And then at least once a year everybody put on their oldest, filthiest clothes and we'd go clean out everything that didn't burn. You know, all the cans and so on that were all smashed and broken up and anything else. Well, one time one of the cooks up here had opened the flour bin or the flour sack in the back of the kitchen, and it had weevils in it. You know, that happens occasionally. So she just set the whole bag of flour out the back door by the garbage. Well, the guy hauling the garbage didn't know any better. He took the loaded up with all the rest of the garbage and put it in the back of the old blue pickup, international pickup, and drove up to the incinerator and backed up. And it had a slot on it big enough to be about the width of a pickup bed. So you just stand the pickup and just shove it all in. You know, it always smoldered a little bit, and then it would eventually take off. Well, he'd thrown a bunch of stuff in it, it started burning, then he threw this sack of flour in, and those of you who know what flour does when it mixes with air and then get ignited, it blew up. It was like a grain elevator explosion. Well, it singed his hair and his eyebrows, knocked him down, and blew the top off the incinerator. And this top, was as big around as this platform up here that I'm standing, 10, 12 feet around. And we had devil time getting that back up and on top again with no crane or anything else to put it back on. But he discovered what happens, with flour and air. Anyway, this tank is the mate to the one that's right across the road from us here. The mining company installed a tank this size just on this side of Lodge 4, just across the road. buried it in the ground, and they hauled diesel oil up here, and then underneath Lodge 4, there is a pump system that pump, that when you turn it on, electric motor, it pulls a manifold all over town. And then you could go around from chalet to chalet or dorm to dorm, you know, the lodges, and each one had a small tank, you know, a couple hundred gallons or so, and you'd open a valve and, you know, put in 100 or 200 gallons in the small tank and shut off the valve and go to the next one and just, you know, go around and do that. Well, that tank also runs clear down to the diesel generator plant down by the footbridge. Well, the tank at the diesel plant was small and it had a leak. And so they said, you know, when we're up here alone in the winter and it's hard to get around and so on, we need that diesel plant every once in a while. We'd sure like to have a bigger tank down there and one that didn't have a leak in it. Somebody said, well, we know where there is one that's not in use. And so we said, well, we'll move it. My wife is 5'2" or a little better, so you can see it's a pretty good sized tank. We dug the ends of that thing out with a backhoe, and then Horty and I got on there, and you know, realizing Horty at this time is, you know, in his 70s. And you know, I'm probably in my early 20s, and we were up on top of that tank, and we decided we're going to wash it out with this fire hose that's down here in the bottom. So we hooked onto the fire hydrant, had a nice brass nozzle and good squirt, and we washed all the dirt away from around behind it and around the ends of it, and all of a sudden the earth moved. Well, it wasn't the earth that moved, it was our tank that was floating, and we went up and over. We went up about 2 feet and over about three, standing there looking at each other, holding onto this hose, realizing that it's going to turn us right on over, you know, like a log. So we bailed off the tank pretty quick. Horty's the man in the left with the suspenders. I had my skid lid on there, the hard hat. The other fellow way to the left, obviously also a retired senior citizen. The kid on the right, a college kid. And so the four of us didn't know any better, so we moved that tank. We're leaning against that bomb truck, which we had backed up against the back of the mill building and chained to it so it wouldn't fall down on our hole. And ran the cable out around that tank and back up to the bomb truck so we could let it out. You can see the footbridge and the half-completed sauna in the background. There's the same old truck again, the one and only. And here you can see what our scheme was. We found a piece of railroad rail and put it crossways on the bed of that little truck. You know, it's a 2-ton truck. Right over the rear axle. We had a homemade trailer with a truck rear axle sitting in the back there and welded together another piece of iron for it. Scrounged enough other steel out of the mill to make two planks, if you will, and let that tank down. You can see the cable from my winch truck up here to the right down around that tank and back again. This was before the Exxon Valdez and we didn't know about oil spills. That's all the oil there was in that tank. There you can see the bomb truck up to the right. There you can see it when it still had a cab on it. Anybody who's driven it lately knows that, you know, you don't get in and out of that truck. You put it on and take it off. It wasn't designed to be very comfortable. And it's tough to get in and out now, but you should have been around when it had the cab on it. We rolled that thing down those planks and got it on top of that truck and trailer. But before we got there, we'd calculate how big it was. We had to have Werner buy us 2 28-foot pieces of chain to chain it on because we didn't have that much chain up here at the time. It took a 28-foot piece to go from the truck up over the tank and back to the truck and then the same at the trailer. And there we went. Came down across that old truck bridge, hauled it over to the hydro plant, and we dug a hole over there with a backhoe. Unloaded that tank the same way, only we didn't have enough room in the road, so we had to go around a pulley in a tree and over to the tank. Chained the bomb truck to another tree. Cleaned it up, primed it, and painted it. And then we said, well, how are we going to get it in this hole right side up so that the fill pipes and so on are up and so that the tank doesn't actually, you know, lodge itself crooked or, you know, one end way down or way up or something. So I got an idea. So we turned on the fire hose again and filled the hole full of water, rolled the tank in there, hooked the front end loader on a chain to the top of the tank. You know, there were eyes in the top of it, and just held it while the water settled out, and it was right. Right side up and level, so, you know. It was cheaper than hydraulic fluid or something that you have to use, because we had no crane at that time. So that little tank is now sitting at the just past the diesel plant along the side of the road there, and its mate is right across the road over here. Now the EPA says you can't have underground storage tanks, so I think they both have to come up and out.
How long did it take you to do this whole project?
Oh, a week and a half or so, 2 weeks. That included scrounging all the stuff and welding up the trailer. A couple weeks, probably. Besides that, we had to run buses up and down the road a few times and fix things when they quit and whatnot. I told you I enjoyed building and fixing things. That's what you're going to see pictures of. It's the same trailer that hauled the cement and sand up to the dam construction site. This picture I didn't take. I'd have to say it's one of my favorites. That's the diversion dam and box after we finished it. Stan Anderson, a retired dairy farmer from Langby, Minnesota, actually took the picture. He worked with me. And I got a copy of it from him, standing in Railroad Creek looking back upstream at the overflow from that. Copper Creek, yes, thank you for correcting that. It's up at Copper Creek Basin looking upstream. That's the end of my slides, and I use it only as an object lesson that, you know, Holden Village is a different place for everyone who comes, and it's a different place every day. We all make it what it is. It's a place where you stand still long enough to talk to someone that you would have walked right on by in the rest of the world. And I have to say that some of the friends and friendships I made here are some of the dearest that I've ever had, and Stan was certainly one of those. I also have a special reason for having a fond place in my heart for Holden Village, because I met my wife right over by the Bell. If you'd turn the lights back on for me, I'm done. You're certainly welcome to go. If any of you have questions or comments or thoughts or reminiscences, I'd be happy to visit with you.